My name's Tom Jennings, and this is the 24 Frames Cast. So I'm recording this episode as kind of a backup in case I don't get to record the main episode I was hoping to do this week, which I am working on, and it's going to be about Andrew Niccol's science fiction film Gattaca, which I've recently gone back to and watched and really kind of have a kind of a reappraisal and a rethink about how I feel about that film, having watched it many, many times over the years. And what I've decided to do is put out some bonus episodes when perhaps I am struggling for time to finish off episodes, so that at least there is some kind of content hitting the feed. And I really noticed, and this isn't to disrespect or kind of say anything negative about the kind of the podcast, video cast, blogosphere, whatever you want to call it, but I do notice that a lot of the people online do tend to talk about contemporary films, the same films. There does seem to be, as far as I'm concerned, a gap in this market to talk about releases and films which perhaps slip through the net. And I understand why that is. I mean, I do really enjoy the videos that the YouTuber, The Critical Drinker, makes, mainly about contemporary films, but I think I do find them genuinely brilliant pieces of criticism, and also they are incredibly funny sometimes. I know he is quite divisive, but you know, I think kind of the space for kind of reviewing new Marvel films is probably best left to people like that. So I've decided then to do these episodes, and hopefully I might be able to point you in the direction of some films or that you might not have seen, or releases that you've been umming and ahhing over. And I've picked up two Blu-rays in the past couple of weeks, which I thought I would pass on recommendation. The first is Akira Kurosawa's High and Low. This has been put out by BFI on Blu-ray, and it's the first time this film has been available in the UK on Blu-ray. I do have the Criterion Blu-ray edition of this film, which I really liked. However, I saw some comparisons on DVD Beaver between the new BFI version and the Criterion version, and there were, like a lot of things, I suppose it was kind of an indulgence to go back and double dip, but I'm really glad that I did, because I don't have a Universal UHD player, and in order to watch a film that I own, like for Criterion Blu-rays, I have to rip the Blu-ray onto an ISO file out of it, and then transfer it onto a hard drive, and then put it onto a stream and all that kind of thing. It is a bit of a pain in the ass. And High and Low is one of my favourite Akira Kurosawa films. So I picked up the new Blu-ray of this from BFI, and I have to say, I thought this was absolutely brilliant. The first thing to point out is, but as I said, there is a slight difference, I think, in the image between the Criterion and this edition. I'm sure it's there's another space for someone to go through these and tell me why one's brilliant and one's awful and whatnot. These were my observations of the two. I think there is a lot more contrast in the Criterion version. The BFI version, I think, has more detail in the screen. Has more detail in the image. It's not quite as contrasty, but you can definitely see more detail, especially I think scenes where there's kind of brighter whites in the image. There's a lot more detail in the BFI version. Now, I'm not one of these people who, and by God, there are enough of them on YouTube, who will literally pick a scene and go, this is awful. This is like some form of criminal vandalism that's taken place by such and such a Blu-ray thing. Don't buy it. On the whole, most Blu-rays, you know, there's going to be issues that people have with them. I'm more interested in the film, but I certainly noticed when I compared the two that the BFI does have a lot more detail in the image. As I understand, I think there has been a new 4K scan of the film, so that may well be the reason why. But again, I think you've got to really be there for the story with these. You can nitpick at the image and the sound options and blah de blah. But for the record as well, this does sound great, especially on a surround sound. It's had, I believe it had a 4.0 original soundtrack, and it's been expanded to a 5.1 on this. They did it on the Criterion version too. They've done it on this as well. I didn't really notice much difference in the audio quality, but it certainly is a very kind of, it has a very wide soundstage and quite in-depth surround channels. I just enjoyed the package overall, but again, it's the film I'm there for, and I'm sure when we talk about Akira Kurosawa, it tends to be kind of the usual, you know, Rashomon, the Seven Samurai and whatnot. And although I don't think in any way, shape or form, High and Low is considered to be underrated, I don't think it's talked about enough, because it is a brilliant film. And there's so much going on in this film to love. It's a police procedural, it's a thriller, and there's a lot going on as well. It is making, I think, a kind of a social commentary about the state of Japan at the time, but it's absolutely gripping. The standout for me, though, is the composition of the widescreen frame on this. It was shot in Toho scope, and it is absolutely gorgeous. I love the use of space in films, and the space between characters and locations and whatnot. And some of these compositions are absolutely exquisite. I could talk for hours about them, but one of the best pleasures in watching this film is simply looking at it. And I don't ever think, and that's not to say it's kind of style over substance, it most definitely isn't, but it is an absolute lesson in how to frame and compose widescreen imagery. So that would be my first pick. Next up would be Criterion's release of Anthony Mann's Winchester 73. I did pick up the 4K version of this. It does, I might add, and something really annoys me is when films are released on UHD and they don't include a normal Blu-ray. This, you still get the original Blu-ray. But I had a Blu-ray copy of this film that was not particularly, it was okay. I think it was an old Warner Brothers one, but they have gone back and given it the 4K treatment. It isn't, I might add, a ultra high definition, which is not HDR, it's just 4K, but it looked absolutely gorgeous. It had some really interesting features as well. There was an interview with a film program about the portrayal of Native Americans in the Western genre, which I was actually really interesting, as well as a really interesting documentary about Anthony Mann at Universal. But the film itself, it's quite an interesting narrative structure in this, because it follows the kind of, I suppose, that the main character in the film is a Winchester 73. We see it change hands through various forms, from, I guess, the people we recognise as being the good guys to Native American Indians to the bad guys. And at an hour and a half, I think it really is kind of filled with ideas, and I think it may lag a little bit during its final act, but overall, it's a really interesting Western. I think it's one that kind of belongs in that kind of subcategory of Westerns, along with kind of the oddities like Johnny Guitar or something like that. I compared the 4K UHD with the Blu-ray. It's not night and day, it has to be said, but if you do, there is definitely a sharper image in the 4K. I would recommend, as always, with things like the price difference between the 4K and the Blu-ray is £7. Even if you haven't upgraded yet to 4K UHD, what have you, I would still buy this dual package in case you do decide to take the plunge in the future. And if you haven't taken the plunge, I did do an episode on UHD and which one my kind of thoughts on it a few episodes ago. So go and have a listen to that, and you might be able to get some recommendations if you're interested. So next up was a film I watched on Mubi by Magnus von Horn. And this was The Girl with the Needle. It had a very small theatrical release back in January and then was kind of put straight onto the movie. I think it is one of their original releases, which would probably explain why that happened. But The Girl with the Needle follows a character called Caroline, who lives in Denmark, and we are in the year 1919. And she is trying to claim a widow's allowance for her husband, who she believes has been killed in World War One. She isn't denied compensation because hasn't been found dead and is therefore only missing. She ends up having an affair with the head of the textile factory she works for. And anything else I say from here on will possibly spoil this film for you. It's safe to say that as I was watching this, I didn't really have a clue where it was going. I didn't know anything about this film. I deliberately tried to ignore anything that might give the plot away. Someone had recommended it to me at work and had said, just watch it, and which was good enough advice for me, because that's the person whose film opinion I trust. And I did not move for 2 hours whilst this film was going on. It is utterly gripping. I did get a little bit annoyed because I was watching it up in the film room when I saw it was another, I guess I don't want to say this in inverted commas, like an art house film shot in the Academy ratio. Sometimes it really annoys me when contemporary filmmakers do that. I sometimes think they're doing it as a kind of almost like anti-cinema statement or something. But this, although it has been shot in the Academy ratio, is so well composed. It actually fitted the story for once, which is a lot of time I don't think it does when people do that. And I'm not going to say anything else. If you haven't watched this film, for the love of God, and you've got Mubi, go and watch it now, because this will definitely, I'm sure of it, will make my top 10 list for the end of the year. So well directed, so well acted, genuinely gripping, and the way in which the characters develop and change, it's so refreshing to see a film so well written and planned and crafted that. And I just compared it to the trailers for the films I watched recently. I went to go and watch September 5th in the cinema with my girlfriend. And there were trailers for about five films, and you could pretty much guarantee the plot of every single one of them. It was so depressing. So to have a film like this that completely keeps you on the edge of your seat, it's beautiful to watch, brilliantly acted. I think I might be wrong here. I'm pretty certain it has been nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars yet. And I can guarantee it is better than every single Best Picture nomination. I talk about it nominated for the foreign language film category as well. You can guarantee it's better than every single one of the films that's been nominated for Best Picture, hands down. And I would just say, whilst I'm on the subject of Mubi, I subscribed to Mubi a few years ago and I had a number of issues with it. Mainly, I thought that the quality of the streams weren't very good. They seemed to be quite encoded at quite a low bit rate. Even if I was, you know, watching them on the TV downstairs or projected in the film room, I didn't think they were particularly great. The sound options were pretty limited as well. They were all 2.0 stereo. So they would have films like Nicholas Finding Refn's Drive on there, which has got a huge soundtrack and was really good surround mix. And it's like, why do I want to watch this on a stereo mix? It didn't seem right. And they didn't have any kind of ultra high definition streams either. They have now got 4K. This is on 4K, but I watched the 1080 version of it in the film room. And I have to say, I thought the quality was absolutely brilliant. They really seem to have done something regarding the kind of the compression that they've been using. And the sound on this, they've got a 5.1 mix on it. This film sounds huge. It's got it reminded me a little bit of Under the Skin in terms of its sound design. It really works, even though it's a period film. It had a kind of contemporary feel to the soundtrack, and it just worked really well. Do yourself a favour. Don't do any research as to what this film is about, and your therapist will thank me in due course. Next up was a Blu-ray put out by Second Run last year called The Circus Tent, an Indian film directed by Govindan Aravindan. And this is going to be quite a hard sell, because the film is essentially a documentary look at a travelling circus who pitch up on a riverbank and put on performances for the locals. It's got a mixture of professional and non-professional actors, and I don't think it's uncharitable to say that you can tell who the non-professional actors in this film is. It doesn't really have a narrative as such. It mainly kind of revolves around this. There's a performance, and then we see the people in the audience watching the performance, and then we see the next day people kind of going about their lives in the community in which the troupe is performing. It is not, I think the word gripping would probably not describe it, but it's certainly an incredibly interesting film. It is beautifully shot in black and white, and it has an almost anthropological aspect to it that you feel like you are definitely in another world. I didn't realise it was filmed in 1978, and if you had asked me when was this film made as I was watching it, I would have I would have said the late 50s or the early 60s. I don't think it's uncharitable to say that I think that India at this time was clearly, and to many respects still is, a developing country. And it was quite jarring to me when I realised it was filmed so close to the 1980s, because the world it portrays, as I said, if someone had said this was filmed in 1950 but about events that occurred in the 1930s, I just would not have been surprised. But it was a really interesting film, and I did have conflicting views as I was watching it. There's some scenes with like animals that are performing that I didn't enjoy, and I did actually have to fast forward those. There's nothing nice about seeing a beautiful cat kind of being whipped into doing things. But the performances of the circuses themselves, like, they're really not that impressive, yet the villagers are absolutely enthralled by them. And I found myself enjoying the performances of the circus through the sheer delight of the people that were watching it. Where I think the film does go wrong is that there's some scenes which are clearly scripted, and these do stand out a mile off from the other stuff that you from the other scenes that you see in the film. And there's some quite jarring tonal shifts. They suddenly make you realize that there is a kind of sadness to some of the performances, and there's a kind of good use of voiceover narration to explain the backstories of a few of them, as they kind of give testimonies whilst the film's going on. I did feel that although I didn't feel the film dragged, I felt it could have lost 10 or 15 minutes, especially shortening some of the performances scenes. But overall, I was, for the duration of the film, pretty captivated by it. My girlfriend walked in as I was watching it as well, and she started watching it for a bit, and then kind of snapped out and started telling me what it was she had come up for. And what the film doesn't have narratively, I think it has in terms of its sheer cinematic impact. The shots in the morning, for example, of people washing themselves in the river, and just the kind of the overall ambience of the piece, make this, I think, a really interesting watch. I picked up a copy of it from the film rental service Cinema Paradiso, which, if you are not a member of, I can heartily recommend. I'm not endorsed in any way to say this, but I still use Cinema Paradiso to rent films like this, because I couldn't see myself wanting, if I was to buy it, it would probably cost like 15, 20 quid or something. It's not a film I want to particularly own, but I would want to watch it on the best quality possible. So my recommendation would be, if you haven't already and you are thinking about signing up to it, have no hesitation, because Cinema Paradiso has your back when it comes for releases like that. So that's going to be it then for this little roundup of what I've been watching. I will make more of these episodes to plug the gaps where I can't quite get round to finishing episodes. But let me know what you've been watching and any recommendations, and I'll gladly add them to my list. If you want to contact me, it's by email, it's 24framescast@gmail.com. I am still on Twitter, but I'm increasingly, I probably go on it about once a week now. It has just become the land of the crazy, and Blue Sky seems to be just as equally mental, but we shall see. So I will be in contact soon.